grace and faith were used on us, not by it.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
That was Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Thursday, October 19, 2017, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you today from the Gospel Revolution Studios right here in Eva, Alabama, but right now from Palm Beach Gardens with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the Gospel is the President and Founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Mr. Williams, would it be in order for me to ask you how you are today without getting a total weather report?
Well, I am wonderful because it's beautiful outside.
Did you like the Nashville Homeless Voice Choir last week and how they contributed to the weather?
Oh, Lord. Am I supposed to be honest?
Well, you can be because, see, when I recorded that up in Nashville under one of the overpasses on 65, they were at the end of the week. It was a Friday and they'd had a little bit too much Listerine, if you know what I mean.
Well, I am sure I'm not having as great a day as they, but it's a good day. It's been a good weekend. I think yesterday was one of my more interesting days. I spent the entire day, and I mean all day long, reveling in the condition of my soul from what we have learned. All the things I used to pursue me now.
Dang. I have not found that. I used to pursue women. and I have not found that. As I walk through Publix and I see all those yummy mummies at the dairy counter, I say to myself, self, according to Mike Williams, these people should be chasing you.
Well, they chase me, but to no avail, of course. But
no, of course.
But no, it really has just been an amazing weekend for me. I loved every moment of it. I was here at home alone and folks, we are so fortunate. I know I'm experiencing nothing less than what all the other gospel revolutionaries are, but this venture into the subjects of things like prayer and faith and hope are so beneficial to us, and we're going to be continuing those again on other PowerCasts. So anyway, my week's been good, my weekend was good, and it's a fine morning here. Dare I ask about how things are for Donald Bartlett in Eva, Alabama?
Well, is it ever unsafe to ask?
It's always unsafe to ask.
Well, we just finished in our wonderful little community of Eva, Alabama, we just finished building a three-holer so that when people amble out of the local tavern, they will have somewhere to visit. Now, when I was a kid, we had a one-holer, and our one-holer was a nice little box fitted over a big hole in the ground, and we actually were one of the richer people in the neighborhood, and we had a crescent moon carved into the front door of the one-holer. But now in Eva, Alabama, we have a three-holer, and you can talk to people in the next hole. It's very, very convenient.
Well, now, was the crescent moon carved in the door for seeing out or seeing in?
I think it was more a case of primitive air conditioning than anything else. You could have a square, you could have a circle, you could have a crescent moon, and we had
that was the highest class.
It was a mark of distinction.
Yes, I am sure it was.
And I'm sure that only some of our listeners will even
Hopefully.
So, okay.
You're going to have to get this program out of the toilet somehow. You took it there, so you've got to get it out.
I think that would necessitate, firstly, getting my mind out of the toilet. But
now, that's a little more difficult job. But
you call it difficult. You're being very kind. Hey, so we, for the first time, as we said on the Gospel Revolution page, as distinct from the Gospel Revolution and Friends of Mike Williams group and the Gospel Revolution private group, some of you haven't been there, by the way, the Gospel Revolution page. When you see our invitations for you to like that page, what you're doing is, when you like it, you are increasing our Facebook value. But we are starting to, and have been for a few weeks, posting what we need to post there first and then transcribing that or copying that to other places, and it makes it very much easier. And also, we sent out in the newsletter this week and posted, I think, on the Gospel Revolution page, the fact that we have produced our last PowerCast on a Thursday.
Yes.
Family, I know that there are people who are out there who you meet Thursday nights to just to get together and listen to the PowerCast. But what we have to do at this end of things is to figure out a way to make this not just an ongoing success that it is, but we need to make this viable for Michael and I when we are recording it. So please understand that we have gone down in our staff since Jeff Robertson left us to pursue other fields, and that has put a little bit more pressure all the way around, and this is the way that we are going to handle it on the PowerCast. So please forgive us. I hope you understand, and just know that you are the only reason that this has been such a successful ministry for so long, and we plan to do nothing to interrupt that.
Yeah, that is exactly right, Don. We have, and I think the people have probably noticed, it has been a bit of a challenge, and also helps everybody realize just how much Jeff Robertson did, and actually still does a lot for the Gospel Revolution.
He absolutely does, yes.
So this is just a part of the process, and we've tried to figure out how to get this out on not just a timely fashion, but to get it out on a regular basis at a certain time. So this has been the best solution. We kind of put our heads together. We came up with several options. Some of them worked for some of us. Some of them didn't work for the other, but this one seems to work for everyone. So that's the one we're going with, and we hope that it works for you. If you listen on Thursday and you can't change that day, just skip 1 week and you'll always have a fresh new PowerCast to listen to on Thursday at any time you want it when you arrive on Thursday. And if you want to start listening a little earlier or a little later, it will already be there for you. May we suggest that to keep you from going through withdrawal, that maybe on the week you skip, go back and listen to an old one.
Or better yet, listen to some of the new Calgary ones which are up there for free.
Oh, my goodness, yes. In fact, you could spend a little bit of time on that, and then you'll have all kinds of PowerCast to go back and listen to on whatever day you choose.
Mike, this week we had some follow-up from our last show.
Yes, we did.
And the first comes from Michael Andrew Foster. Now, Mike Foster and I had a chat on the phone this week, and it was one of those wonderfully nutritious conversations where we just enjoyed each other and a few of each other's thoughts at the same time. He writes, "Wow, Mike and Barris, you guys knocked it out of the park with this last podcast, Religion's Faithless God. Thank you so much." It was so dynamic and filled with current events and relevant teachings on the gospel contrasted with Christianity out there. I sent the podcast link to a young man in our study who is trying to sort out futuristic issues. Futurism, by the way, family, was this invention by the Roman Catholic Church in order to deflect contradiction and assertions about the Pope being the great harlot of Babylon. That was futurism, and in it is contained the rapture theory, the dispensationalism concept, left behind, a whole bunch of things. So he says, I sent the podcast link to a young man in our study who is trying to sort out futurist issues and which covenant we are under. Please accept this excerpt from my article continuing this theme of the covenants as you are able to share. As always, your friend Michael Andrew Foster. Now, I'm not going to bring Michael Foster's writings on the theme of the covenants today, but we may share it in the future. But anyway, it was nice to get some positive feedback about a show. I don't know what we did right, but we got a couple of other responses, Mike.
Yes, we did. I remember proofing the show, listening to it before it would go out. We always like to have more than one set of ears on this to catch everything that we can to that of something that might needed to be added or subtracted.
Or if I've taken it into the toilet and you want it out.
Oh, exactly. I have to say that I had a lot of fun while we were recording it, but I have to tell you, the greatest fun was listening to it. It was absolutely amazing. And if anyone missed that show, it has to be at the top of your list to go back and take it in. And listen to it sometime when you can give it your full attention, because it is so fully loaded. If you are distracted washing dishes or doing something else, I tell you, this show deserves your full attention. It got mine, that's for sure. I probably wouldn't even have to say that, because once you turn it on, it's going to reach out and grab you, and you're going to have no choice but to dry your hands, put the dishes down, and sit and listen. It really is amazing.
You know, I listen to a whole bunch of stuff while I'm on the riding mower. Or maybe I'm down in the tool room and I'm putting some of my tools back where they belong. Or sometimes when I'm driving. When I'm driving, I call it my little university on wheels, because I'm not listening to radio.
Yeah.
And believe me, we have some great radio down here in Evor, Alabama. We have... there is nothing like tuning in on your radio on a Sunday morning at about 11 a.m. and there is not one station playing any rock and roll. It's all Southern gospel, someone preaching. I mean, it's, let me tell you something. This has enriched me. Not.
So, do they still play the Lum and Abner show down there?
They do. They do. They. In fact, we had episode 13 and a half last week. So, and I say a half because they talk about each other as if they're only one and a half wits.
Yeah, exactly.
Or at least they do talk about each other as if they're two half wits, which in fact means one wit. So it's very difficult to say.
You're good at math. I ever told you that?
Listen, mate, there are three kinds of people in this world. People who are good at math and people who are bad at math.
Gospel revolution.
Marcel Rose, on the other hand, said this. The latest Powercast was one big audio miracle. Wow, very elegant jingles. What an intro. Now, that intro had a secret voice that we're going to keep using, and some of you will recognize it and some will not. But he says, wow, what an intro. This is very classy and elegant. The message is also extremely sobering. That was Marcel Rose. Now, when Marcel Rose says that, I take notice as if Randy French said it, because Marcel Rose is the person who runs our 24/7 radio show, and you can listen to that www.gospelrevolution.com. Just click on audio, and then under that, click on 24/7 radio, and you'll see the product that Marcel's putting out. Marcel is in the Netherlands, and he's never put his hand out to ask for anything. He's just, what he's doing is just running a server out of his own bedroom, and he is putting that Gospel Revolution radio out, and we are so much in his debt for doing that. Mm-hmm. Marcel, of course, because of that, is an executive producer, with the show. And you're going to hear us talking more about producers, sponsors, and executive producers as we go through, as this is, in fact, a pledge month, isn't it, Michael?
It is. It is our fall pledge drive. And just began a few days before the release of the PowerCast here. And we will tell you more about that later in even this show.
Woohoo!
It's going to be exciting.
All right. Oh, and while we're in the previous show, let me just remind you of something you said to me when you rang me to approve the proof. You said, how did we pack so much information into so little space? And I don't know, Michael, because I rang you later in the week and I said, look, I've had three people all come to me and say, and we've got another one, but we're going to cover that in comments on the web site. But I said, I don't know what we're doing right. We just seem to be, I don't know, every week it seems to get better.
Well, we confessed it into existence, right?
Oh, that's it. We spoke it into existence. Oh, my gosh, if you call those things which are as if they are not.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
You make me say it every week, so.
Now, also about the last show, we heard from an executive producer of the show. Now, this is just to let you know, we don't let anybody off lightly. You can be an executive producer, you can be a producer, you can be a sponsor, you can stick your hand in your pocket and give us money, but we will correct you if you come at us with great assertion, you must expect us to come to respond likewise. Now, this executive producer, and the reason we're not mentioning her name is because we cover each other here, and you're not going to know who wrote this. But this executive producer wrote Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me. Now, this was directly from last week's show. And they say, the verse says nothing of the kind. Nothing in capital letters, by the way, Michael, just in case you missed the import of this communication. My translation of Philippians 4:13 is this. Be whole, all creation, in Christ as one who empowered me. One in capital letters. Be whole, all creation, in Christ as one who empowered me.
And they're talking about which verse now?
Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Is the common English translation. Now, I want to point out that in English, you have three tenses, past tense, present tense, future tense. It's really simple. We make it easy. But not so the Koine Greek. The Koine, K-O-I-N-E, Koine Greek, which was the subset of classical Greek that was used not just in the Bible but also in some other extant Greek documents from the first century previous to Christ, the first century after Christ, etc. They don't have three forms of the tense as we do. They have six forms. So you've got that to start with. Secondly, you've got the voice, the middle voice, the active voice, and so forth. And these things say who is doing what and to whom and for how much, essentially. Then you've got the case, which tells you who owns what or who does what. So when you're translating from the Greek, the Strong's Concordance is actually quite deprived of information. So let's read this verse. Let's read it in its original form. It reads, Pater Eshuo ento endunamauti me Christo. Now, what does that mean? It simply means this. All, Panta, Pantalism, whatever, Panta, all, Yeshu, I am being strong in the one able causing me anointed. Now, that is a alliteration or transliteration of the original Koine Greek. As far as I can make out, and I've spent quite a bit of time on this because I thought, I if I'm wrong, I want to know I'm wrong. The best two translations of this in English is the Concordant Literal Version by a gentleman called K-N-O-C-H Knock back in the very early 1900s. And interestingly, the version that preceded in the Jehovah's Witnesses organization or the Watchtower organization, whatever you want to call it, preceded their own version, the New World Translation. And that reads, "For all am I strong in him who is invigorating me, Christ." Now, Young's literal translation, another literal translation, and I'll leave it to you to discover what a literal translation is, but suffice it to say that these are very, very accurate translations. Young's says, "For all things I have strength in Christ's strengthening me." Now, and if you look at every single English translation, I know I come against most translations as misanthropic, as misled, as mistranslations, and not just accidental but intended and willful translations. But this is just it's the same thing you'll find in all translations. Now, when I find all translations saying the same thing, I do pause and ask myself why. But yeah, these two translations, as I'm reading the Greek, seems to me to be the most authentic.
And it also fits in the context of what we read through. We went back several verses before, we spot checked, and Paul's talking about him knowing how to do what needs to be done while he's abounding and being abased, both. I have the strength in all of these things to do whatever I need to do. The context of this flows so much better with, I have the strength I need at all times, regardless of my external conditions, to do what I got to do. Context is king indeed.
So our beloved executive producer, please do not renounce us. Just accept that we're looking at things as closely as you are, and we appreciate very much your translation.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't see any support for it. And Mike, who read through the whole chapter last week, sees no support for it either.
Gospel Revolution.
This week we heard from Rob Crazy Keys. I mean, what week don't we? And Rob said the last song, after last week's, we're still on last week's show, the last song, Love's Calling, or whatever it is this a Gospel Revolution person, and do they have a CD for sale? I like all the songs I hear here. Does Randy French write and have CDs? Thanks to Mike's teaching, I had to throw away all my church music. Oh, you had a book burning, did you?
Oh,
gosh, don't we remember those days when we all burned our rock and roll? You know what? I've given away three libraries in my time, each of which was maybe 600-700 books. And it was like, if I really had to wax super spiritual about this, I'd say the last time it was God at work, because there was a hole in the ceiling and apparently a whole bunch of mold got into our house and destroyed a whole bunch of books I really wanted. Yeah, it was like God was saying to me, books,
exactly.
Books, schmooks, yeah.
You can't ignore mold.
Yeah. No.
It's always a sign of a very strong voice from God.
That's what I was thinking. Anyway, he said, oh, gosh, we're getting off track again. Thanks to, oh, yeah, the record. We used to burn our records. I wish to hell I'd burnt my Christian records like Rob Crazy Keys. Oh, by the way, I emailed Rob this week, and I found out which Rob it was. And, yeah, this is a good man. He said, I might be a little warped, but I played that last jazz song 5 or 6 times and still want more. Wish it was about 2 hours long. I'd actually try to get that on the radio in spite of the politics and the games and such, probably only six or seven major company reps you'd have to submit it to. It would have to be submitted through an attorney or it gets tossed. I'm a personal friend of a big shot Nashville producer who may be able to promote it. I'm a dreamer, just saying. In a second comment, he says, James said, take them to the elders and not the apostles because the apostles couldn't heal them? If hell is a real place bad people go, which we know it isn't, Jesus is there too, as he said, I will never leave or forsake you. In the news, Jesus goes to hell. Love the Bonehead Award or whatever it is. Like Barris, I too am anxious to break through to the other side, but I don't want to see it quite yet. When doesn't matter, but go quick, would be cool. We think we go to heaven or to be with God. Why not wonder and be excited? And then he reiterates again, he says, jazz music at the end, how cool. Okay, well, let me answer that question up front with the jazz music first. This was written by somebody who was at our Cullman conference 4 or 5 years ago now, Jesse and Peg Zuniga. You can hear their music on Reverb Nation. If you go to ReverbNation.com and look in Zuniga for the Zuniga Project, you will be able to tap into a whole bunch of their music. I started using their music 4 years ago, I guess, but I lost a lot of it, and I've now gone back to accessing it. So these guys, RGRs, they lived in Florida for a long time. They were worship leaders. They were drummed out of Christianity when they started asking questions. And you see, that's the interesting thing about religion. You cannot ever ask questions. But here in the Gospel Revolution, we encourage asking questions because questions are
the lifeblood of the Gospel Revolution.
Questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the Gospel Revolution.
I like the way, Rob, Crazy Keys, that you took up with, James said, take them to the elders and not the apostles. And you know why that was? I'll tell you right now why that was. It's because James was an elder. He was never an apostle. Yeah. And he didn't want to be left out of things.
Yeah. There's always a hook. There's always a hook.
Follow the money trail. This week, Rob May. And Rob May, by the way, someone asked, do we have any other people writing music? Somebody asked who was the person that played the song who wrote the song at the end of the second to last show. It was Robert May. This man is quite unique. He is a wonderful writer of music. He is an unusual appreciator of the types and shadows of the Old Testament and how the law, the Psalms, and the prophets really are all about Jesus. And he's just a very interesting thinker. He says, what is faith? Your last podcast got me thinking, and I have come to some thoughts that help me see things a little differently. Hebrews 11:1. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Rob called me a week ago, and we had this long discussion about this very thing, and it took me 15 minutes to see what he was trying to get at. But he says this, I was thinking, what if Paul is describing what faith is before and after the cross with these two phrases? Before the cross, faith is a substance or essence of those things which are to come. And essence, by the way, is exactly the Greek word for substance. Those things hoped for and promised. But after the cross, it is the evidence of those things having come. Now, he puts a question mark behind that. In other words, he's not trying to convince us of anything. He's saying, what do you think about this? Hebrews 11:2, he says, for by it the elders obtained a good report. Through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. In this verse, Paul lays out the framework of the rest of the chapter. Everything from here on follows the same pattern of invisible things and apparent things.
Yes, it indeed does.
From the perspective of the patriarchs, they were seeing things that had not yet manifested or appeared to anyone else, the essence or substance of things hoped for. From our perspective, those invisible things seen by them beforehand are proof or evidence. In John 14:29, Jesus, in speaking about the cross to come, said, "And now I have told you before it comes to pass, that when it is come to pass, believe."
Mm-hmm.
This seems to be the dividing line between the essence or substance of things hoped for and the proof or evidence of things not seen. Just some food for thought, looking at it from a slightly different angle than I had before, Robert May.
Yes, and for that, Robert May, thank you very much. You know, it takes really all of us to view these things and from every possible angle. And every time we look at it from a little different angle, we get more information. Doesn't mean it's the final word on it either. I mean, you know, we've gone through this process. Every time I understand something more about the gospel, I have to go back and read Genesis all over again. The entire future is laid out in Genesis, but we have to be able to understand what it's saying. And with the misconceptions of the gospel, we change Genesis. As we understand the gospel, we go back and we see Genesis differently.
Oh, man. Okay. I just got to cut you off there. I had this concept several years ago that we're not living in God's plan B, but we're living in his plan A.
Mm-hmm.
But what Christianity has done is said, well, no, we're living in his plan B. He had to evolve a whole different scale of approach. He had to somehow, according to Christianity, A, account for being blindsided.
Yes.
He just didn't see it coming. Poor God.
Yeah.
What a mentally crippled God Christianity serves. Because once you come to that conclusion, now you have to say, oh, what will we call this point of departure from God's plan?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I know. Let's call it the fall.
Yeah, and once you understand, just like reading through Paul's teachings about the plan of the gospel, that God inhabiting the human race, assimilating the human race, if you will, and he did that before he created the planet. So there couldn't have been something that happened on the planet that he created for assimilation of the beings he created and him have a slip up, you know. It's like, oops, I didn't see that one coming.
This is something which has just occupied my mind for years.
Yeah, and you really, really pressed me on it, and I didn't like it, to tell you the truth. Because
yeah, I know you dropped my weekly wages to $10 a week. And I'm never going to forgive you for that, mate.
Well, 15 was just too much. Yeah.
But you know, when you look at all this, and it doesn't matter how long we take to actually acquiesce or to actually come to the point of saying, huh, well, that makes sense. What is important is the fact, as you laid out in the predestination series that you taught in Calgary 7 months ago, and the recent series, which is up on the web, please download it. If it's okay with you, we're going to make it free, not 99 cents. Is that okay with you?
It's quite all right with me.
You can get there this week and you can get it. And in that, you laid out things which were put in place from before the foundations of the world, not from the foundations of the world. As you said, these things happened before in the beginning.
Yeah. That knocked me over when that came out of my mouth.
I may have had it once or twice. I think of hearing something come out of my mouth that I didn't expect. Sometimes it was with ladies. And I wish to heck I could say it was with spiritual matters, but I'm not sure I can, actually.
Robert May, thank you once again for sending this in. And we encourage all of our gospel revolutionaries, as you have self-titled yourselves. You know that I didn't come up with that title.
But who did? Who did? Hey, what do you mean? We own a Facebook group by that name. Help me here.
Yeah, it's Gospel Revolution, but gospel revolutionaries call themselves that. So we just follow along. And guys, keep these things coming. This is what, if you enjoyed last week's PowerCast, you have to understand that it turned out that way because of the questions we received.
Oh, yeah.
And the comments and the things like this.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are what makes the show good. Believe me, it's not Don Bartlett that makes this show good. I accept that. I know that.
Oh, now I'm going down to $5 a week.
And I'll be honest, it's not me that makes the show good. It is you guys that make the show good. And your participation is what knocks it out of the park. We can get a show out. You know, goodness gracious, you've got almost as many years as the earth had left after God said the flood was coming. So
I do not.
Between the two of us.
I do not. Okay, between the two of us, yeah.
In fact, we're 10 years over that between the two of us, I think, if my math is right. But, yeah, please. Goodness, when you sit there and you have this thought, and I know it happens to everyone of you, and you have a thought, oh, my goodness, I never thought about that. Write that down. I never thought about that. So, and tell us what it was, and that's going to cause us to think about it even more. Maybe we said it and we didn't even realize we said it. Or maybe you heard something between the lines. You see, there's one thing that we are convinced of in the gospel revolution. Number one, as teachers of the gospel, we expect you to know more than we teach. It's the only way I can claim to be a good teacher, and I'm a good teacher. Don's a good teacher. But the only affirmation of that is if you learn more than what we teach. There is no other affirmation of teaching skills other than the student learning more than the teacher, understanding more than the teacher. So we expect that. The other thing is, if this is the truth,
we don't like it, but we do expect it.
Sometimes you got to respect what you don't like. But the rest of the story of that is that if this is truth, it's been in you since you were conceived, my dear friend. Oh my gosh. As a teacher, you must understand the most comforting thing I have in my little quiver of arrows in teaching is that I know that what I'm sharing is already inside you. This is just an affirmation of what you already have. After all, it's called good news. It's not good prophecy, folks. And if it's good news, we're telling you about something that already happened. And it happened 2,000 years ago. If it happened 2,000 years ago, you've had it from conception. And maybe before. Who knows? We just know you didn't get it after you came into this life. That's for sure. We are only affirming that which has to be there, because it is truth.
This week, we also heard from Wayne Leese, and he said, hi, Mike and Don. I thought the two of you might like this. From a website dealing with the money market, he quoted this. It's by Martin Armstrong, and it is as follows. Intelligence is not measured in the definitive knowledge that it is never wrong. It is measured by the ability to see when you are wrong and quickly adapt to the new reality.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
Say that again.
Intelligence is not measured in the definitive knowledge that is never wrong. It is measured by the ability to see when you are wrong and quickly adapt to the new reality.
Wow, that is...
That sounds like gospel revolution truth to me.
Well, it pulls our butt out of the ringer for being wrong so many times. It gives us intelligence instead of stupidity. I like it.
Well, I applaud you for believing that you've been wrong many times, but I see it more as a step-by-step march forward. Even if it is two steps forward, one step back, which I don't think it has been. All I see in the gospel revolution is a continuum of learning and an appreciation and total readiness to say,
doesn't sound too ready to me.
Wrong. Well, I just can't get over the old Fonzie on Happy Days. I was wrong.
Exactly.
But that's what most people are like. But I haven't seen that. Really, I haven't seen that in the gospel revolution. Now, maybe you've hidden it, in which case you're a very good hider.
Yeah. Well, it is I love the quote, and I don't know when I fell in love with being wrong or finding out that I was wrong. I don't think that I fell in love with being wrong, but finding out I was wrong is definitely a thrill for me. We have no position to defend. That is amazing to me. These are understandings we present for those for you to consider and for us to consider. And we do point out the difference between the gospel and Christianity. It took many years for the gospel to become something definitively different than Christianity to make even that step. So that was very progressive. There was no point in which, before that time arrived, did I feel that there was a necessity to depart from Christianity until we got to a certain point. And when we got to that point to where the scales tipped so completely, with nothing in favor of Christianity and all in favor of the gospel, that's when I realized there is no gospel in Christianity. There's just none there. We can go through all the denominations, all the little subsets of denominations, and you're just not going to find gospel truth there. They are in one of three forms going to be offending, or all forms usually going to be offending the grace of God. They're either going to be talking about sin and what to do about it now, or they're going to be talking about judgment and it's on its way, or they're going to be talking about faith and how that obedience to the law is the way to exercise faith, much less concluding that faith was completed at the cross. They certainly don't do that. So it did become necessary to make that departure. And, I do hold these things in my heart for a long time before I make these steps. I think that most people know that. And for those of you that don't, please understand that it's probably no less than a year that these things are held inside of me before I actually come out with them. That has been as much as 10 years that I've considered things.
Some people would call you stubborn.
Yes, exactly.
I'm one of them.
But for wholly different reasons than everybody else.
No, for unholy different reasons, buddy. You know, so many of us are driven by emotion. And when you're driven by emotion, you can change your outlook in an instant. But, of course, anyone who changes their outlook in an instant can also change it back in an instant.
Exactly.
But when you take a year to come to the conclusions that you have, and in my case, you took 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
And I think that that's just because you didn't like me.
Well, that's true.
There is a certain security in saying, I'm just going to think about this. And by heavens, if you can't say, let me think this through, If you can't say that, then you're subject to something which is not right.
It's called push, pull, and restrain.
Do you want to explain that?
That's a little formula that I came up with for my own life. I don't know how many years ago that came to fruition in my own heart and mind, but I finally realized as the gospel proceeded to have its effect in saving my soul, part of the salvation of my soul is that I ceased to push, pull, or restrain in my relationships with people. Whether it is pertaining to what I teach or what I do or what they do. And it's all wrapped up in the same concept, is that I don't answer a question that has not been asked. It has led to that place of ease that Don Bartlett always accuses me of being in. But folks, I tell you, in the issues of prayer, faith, and hope, you're going to watch yourself pushing, pulling, and restraining others. And where freedom is concerned, that's going to become something that doesn't come natural anymore. It's not going to come natural to push, to get your way, to pull people from the position they are in to your way. It's not going to be within your scope of newfound freedom to restrain anybody from what they are doing, except the only thing you're going to do is promote all of those things that you want people to experience, those things. Constantly, I'm pointing out to people that I've recently befriended, just gently helping them understand, well, you know, they, especially in relationship with family and friends. And they will tell me, you know, what just happened. And I will gently try to point out, you do realize that that is, they're trying to manipulate you. They're trying to make you feel guilty. They're using these tactics of push, pull, or restrain. And you are the only one who can decide. Nobody's going to do that to you.
If I was to use an umbrella term for all of those positions, would manipulation be...
Works really good. It's just that we've used manipulation and not understood what manipulation actually looks like. Push, pull, and restrain, and the definitions of those make it very clear what manipulation looks like.
This week, we also heard from executive producer, and if you want to know what an executive producer is and the advantages of being one is... you'll have to listen on to the pledge drive. Executive producer James Gustafson said this: I'm looking for the Calgary teachings. You said they'd be up on last week's PowerCast. Yes, I did. We had a couple of things that happened, and you weren't the only one that said it, but because you're an executive producer, James Gustafson, it's you that gets heard. We had a website breakdown this weekend, and even more than that, I've had to proof and listen to these recordings to rename them and to post them up. So I am so sorry. I said something, and I have proven my humanity by not being able to do it. So it'll be, as you hear this, they are up. Please accept my apologies for offering more than I produced. Now, Mike, we are building a webpage for testimonials on how Mike Williams Ministries played a part in every single person's highly individual yet often very similar stories. I am fascinated by stories about how our kids left the nest and what for. We see ourselves as standing in the gap for those who are trapped in tribal thinking of any sort to moving forward with their journey. We consider your journey so much more important than anything else, where you've come from, where you're heading to. And I don't like saying those words. There's something inside me which is still sufficiently, pardon me, carnal to dislike saying those words. But we see ourselves, and that is the Gospel Revolution, as if you'll accept the old-fashioned term, standing in the gap for those trapped in tribal thinking of any kind to moving ahead with their journey. Would you consider writing us a rendition, long or short, doesn't bother me, of your journey? We would cherish it and publish it on our website. Any changes to your writings, spellings, punctuations, etc., that we make prior to going public, we will submit to you for your final approval. In other words, we want to know how you came out of religion or how you connected with the gospel revolution, what it did for you and where it has led you. Use your real name or a pseudonym if you like, doesn't bother us. And all you've got to do is give us permission to publish your thoughts and writings on the website or on the PowerCast. So please, we want to hear your story. We want to know how it impacted you. We want to know where you came from and where you are now. No one can say where you're going to.
Yeah, these stories, of course, I get to hear them a lot, especially during pledge drive time. I have the opportunity of hearing the stories once again. And many times I do ask, you know, now remind me how we became connected. And oh my gosh, that's all you got to ask. So they're always good to hear again on the phone in the pledge drives. And text messages, and you guys are so gracious with your comments. But we want the whole world to hear those comments, not just myself. We want the whole world to hear what the gospel has done in your life.
Wow, I feel good. I knew that I would not.
So, Mike, we're in a new pledge drive.
We are indeed. And so, you know, get the plastic out, get the checkbook out.
When things get drastic, put it on plastic.
I will be calling and looking forward to speaking to everyone. I had such a blast last time.
You never spoke to me last time.
I spoke to you almost every day during pledge drive.
Yeah, but you never tried to fleece me.
No, I didn't.
Did I tell you what a pastor once told me? As I was an upcoming pastor, and he told me that the sheep were given to us by God to fleece.
Yeah.
I shit you not. I do not kid you, mate.
Yeah.
So we're doing a pledge drive.
Yes.
What are we going to spend the money on?
Ice cream and cookies and, you know, good stuff.
That's not good stuff. A good stuff would be a new swimming pool filled with money that I could dive into like Scrooge McDuck.
Well, we use it for what we always use it for and what we've proven we use it for all of these years, and that is to get the gospel out. It's been a very productive and fruitful first part of the year from January the 1st until now. We've had so much happen. Oh, my gosh. So many people have come into the gospel revolution. The things that have taken place in Kenya have been powerful. Nardos from Canada coming full into the gospel revolution as a founding pastor of an Ethiopian church there in Calgary, Alberta. All of the things that we've got going on in Southeast Asia that is just mind-boggling. And Julie, don't forget Julie that set in on one of the recordings and has quick become a great friend of mine personally and of the gospel revolution. This girl has gone through a complete revolution, and oh, is she excited. Raised in a family of preachers and ministry and church, and she even owned her own concordance. That's how serious she was about all of this. So
there's not many people that own their own concordance.
No, that is for sure. And if they are, you know that they're at least interested in learning. So this has been magnificent to watch. We have the same conversation, and it's these wonderful, beautiful, same reactions. You know, what tips the scales for one may not tip the scales for the other, but that's why we keep throwing the spaghetti at the refrigerator. We don't know what's going to stick where, with who, or at what time. So we just keep saying, and I tell you what, if you want a PowerCast that was throwing the spaghetti at the refrigerator, that would be last week's PowerCast too, because we threw everything at the refrigerator except the kitchen sink, I think. We may have even thrown that.
We certainly threw each other. So, Mike, when can people expect to hear from you? Look at you, look at their phone and say, not again.
It is in progress.
Okay, let me explain a little bit about donations, and eventually we get to what is an executive producer and so forth. Every new donor to the Gospel Revolution in this pledge drive will get a pharisectomy certificate stating that your inner Pharisee has been removed delicately with surgical precision by the master and teacher himself, Mike Williams. Every monthly pledge of between $10 and $50 will be awarded with sponsor certificates. That makes you a sponsor. These are extraordinarily ordinary looking certificates created in black Arial font on pre-used office stationery and presented in a cheap Chinese frame. Every monthly pledge of over $50 a month will be awarded with producer certificates. These are real producerships, and we will authenticate and endorse those producerships whenever we're asked. You can put your new title on your business cards and use its authentic value wherever those endorsements are accepted. We hear that they work really well on LinkedIn, and when people call us as a referee for your executive producership or producership, we will immediately authenticate it. Every monthly pledge of over $150 a month or $1,800 annually will be awarded with executive producer certificates. These carry the same weight as a producer. These carry the same weight as a producer. Use the title in your resume and make sure to get it printed on your business cards as well.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. Now Gospel Revolution is home sweet home to me.
Hello, this is Randy French coming to you from the Sound Laboratory in Grand Haven, Michigan. Today I'd like to share a chapter out of my book, I Used to Be a Christian, but Jesus Set Me Free. The name of this chapter is, Do You Know the Lord? Hebrews chapter 8, verse 11. And they shall not teach every man his brother, and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for all shall know me, from the least to the greatest. We are supposed to stop teaching you should know the Lord after the cross. Why should we stop teaching this? Because Jesus made or forced you to become one with him on the cross, against your will. Hebrews chapter 8, verse 12. For I will be merciful to their unrighteousness, that is, people before the cross, and their sins and their iniquities I will remember no more, after the cross, that is. There is no longer a law to break. According to Christianity, I can pray and ask Jesus to forgive my sins, and he does. Doesn't that make me sinless and righteous? Knowing that, if I am righteous and sinless, why would I have need of God's mercy? I'm confused if Christianity is correct. According to Hebrews chapter 8, verse 12, in order to get God's mercy, all creation would have to be declared unrighteous. If all I have to do is ask forgiveness, why would I still have need of mercy? Why is it Christianity is always having to do something for their own righteousness? Righteousness was freely given 2,000 years ago, and righteousness is always revealed. It is never earned. It is never asked for. It is never deserved. And where is this righteousness revealed from? It is already inside you, since the cross. If you ever find yourself doing something for righteousness, you can be assured you are either in heresy or Christianity. Whatever Christianity claims, just turn it on its head and you will likely find the truth of the gospel. Would you like another example? Should we follow Jesus' teachings and his doctrines? Hebrews chapter 6, verse 1. Therefore, leaving the principles or the rules of the doctrine of Christ, let us rest in perfection, not laying again the foundation of repentance from the dead works and deeds of keeping the law and of faith towards God. Verse 2. We should also leave the doctrines of baptisms and of laying on of hands and the resurrection of the dead. Forget about the second coming and of eternal judgment. Christian, stop following the principles Jesus taught before the cross at a time under the law. Stop following the doctrine of keeping the law for righteousness because the law was fulfilled on the cross 2,000 years ago. Everything Jesus taught during his 3.5-year ministry, he himself fulfilled on the cross. His teachings are no longer valid. They were superseded by the new covenant between himself and his Father that they planned before the foundations of the earth, long before they ever created man. Stop rebuilding the law of Moses and making yourself a transgressor in the process. Stop repenting from the stupid things you have done that used to be sins when the law was still in effect. Just stop doing the stupid things for your own sake. Morality is not the gospel. Stop worrying about raising the dead. Stop trying to have faith towards God that Jesus said no man has, not even as much as a grain of mustard seed. Stop running around practicing Old Testament washings in the way of baptisms. Stop laying hands on people trying to heal them. And for Pete's sake, stop teaching eternal judgment. I'm sorry to be so offensive to so many well-intentioned Christians, but Christianity teaches total heresy. If Christianity is correct, Jesus accomplished absolutely nothing on the cross. Why do you think Christianity thinks Jesus has to come back again? They think he has to come back again to finish everything he didn't finish the last time, even though he said it was finished. He has to put an end to the transgression. Did anyone ever wonder why it is Paul is the only one who ever said these kinds of offensive things about Christianity? You will never catch Peter, James, or John saying this kind of heresy, that is according to Christianity. That is why I only teach the gospel according to Paul. He is the only one that agrees with the prophets of old. And if Paul ever says anything that doesn't agree with the prophets of old, I'm not required to believe it anyway. Isaiah 53:1. Who has believed our report? No one ever did. Because God was blinding their eyes and hardening their hearts. And to whom is the power of the Lord revealed? No one. It was never revealed to anyone until after the cross. No one ever believed until the end of the world. This is aeon, a messianic age, meaning the death of Jesus on the cross. Not even one of his own disciples ever believed until the end. For they all denied him and they all fled. Mark 14:50, and they all denied Jesus and fled. Matthew 26:56, but all this was done that the scriptures of the prophets would be fulfilled, and all the disciples denied Jesus and fled. Romans 3:3, for what if all did not believe? Shall their unbelief make the faith of God without effect? Romans 3:4, no, it's impossible. Let God no longer conceal that all creation be the liars God created them to be, as it is written, that all creation would be justified in Christ as one, and would overcome when you were judged inside of him on the cross. Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, that is the view and opinion of God. Being justified 2,000 years ago freely by his grace through the redemption that comes as a benefit of being inside of Christ Jesus and one with God. Romans 11:30. For as you all before the cross did not believe, yet have now obtained mercy through their unbelief. Yeah, you heard that right. It was someone else's unbelief that gained you mercy. Romans 11:31, the same as all these now have not believed, that through your mercy, all creation together as one obtained mercy at the same time. Romans 11:32,
For God has concluded them all in unbelief, so that he would have mercy upon all creation. Thank God I was counted among the unbelievers so that God could have mercy on me at the same time as everyone else 2,000 years ago. Galatians 5:4. Christ has become of no effect to you, those of you who think you are justified by the law, for you have fallen from grace in your own minds. Wow. You know, this is also referring to the self-righteousness of Christianity today. The very idea that one would consider themselves to be Christ-like at all is to cheapen the work of the cross. You are no longer trying to be Christ-like. He imputed his righteousness on you. He forced it on you, and you became one with him on the cross. The self-righteousness of trying to keep their own hand-picked laws of the 613 laws in the Bible is ridiculous. Why does Christianity do this? Because Christianity obviously thinks that Jesus did not fulfill the law on the cross. And that is why they think Jesus has to come back a third or a fourth time to finish the transgression and put an end to sin, even though Jesus said with his dying words, "It is finished." What was he referring to that is finished? The work of fulfilling the law and abolishing the law. Good news. Randy French.
If the Bible is all about Jesus, don't you think that most churches would mention him with at least the same frequency as they mention all of their favorite dogmas and doctrine and all those rules of your particular brand of religion? Tithing, moralism, Old Testament law, abortion, gays, politics, all hail the leader, persecution, the end times, don't forget the bloody rules, God's perfect will for your life, fleeing youthful lusts, rock music, speaking in tongues, the coming kingdom, worldliness and how to escape. But those pesky rules, don't forget them. Heresy, prophecy, soul-winning, missions, offerings, wrong doctrine, right doctrine. And don't forget all those bloody rules. Relationships, long hair, short hair, dyed hair, liberalism, greasy grace, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, dispensationalism, and rules, rules, never-ending bloody rules. And Calvinism, Arminianism, a missionary service, Sunday school, swearing and cussing, besetting sins, sexual purity. Oh, and give us some more rules, won't you? False prophets, confession, dress code, mixed swimming, dancing, movies, television, dating. Oh, and did I mention the freaking rules?
Bears, I'd like to stop for a moment and go back to my Marine Corps experience. Now, I want people to know that the Marine Corps was the best thing that ever happened to me. The Marine Corps was my mama, was my daddy. The Marine Corps taught me how to be a man and face adversity. The Marine Corps changed my life. I give the Marines the credit for shaping me into the person that I am today. Not home, not church, not Bible. And yes, I did have a horrific experience in the Marines, but that wasn't the Marine Corps itself. You know, if I can go back, Barris, and look at my life, I don't have any regrets. It wouldn't do me any good to have regrets. I did learn some good things from my daddy. I did learn some good things from my family. The Marine Corps for me, it was more than the military. It was more than military service. The Marine Corps took my family life, what I learned at home growing up, and it enhanced it. It made it come to life. What I learned from the Marine Corps is I learned how to further help, how to be a man and stand my ground and how to face adversity. And even though I experienced those horrific things on the mountain, it enables me to face it now and to stand up to it. And to be a shoulder, to be a stalwart for other people who are facing hard times. And to raise a family, to raise my three sons. and to raise them into men in the tradition of excellence, the kind of excellence that I learned in my life, the kind of excellence that I learned in the Marine Corps, that they will be outstanding in everything that they do. That's what I learned. And that's what I would like to impart to any and everybody, is to have that kind of life, to be able to stand and to know that they are independent moral agents, that they can stand up to adversity because they have a life that will never end. But, of course, I think I digress from where we were going. But after the Marines and me thinking that the Marine Corps was going to silence those monkeys, that ape on my back, my mother dying, that I could be born and become a great preacher, that maybe what I experienced on the mountain, that was enough to silence what was going on inside of me. All it did was just drop me in the middle of a barrel of monkeys. And it was one of those monkeys that called me to preach. And here I go thinking that being called to preach would be that one thing that would silence the monkeys. Finally. But after I heard that one monkey call me to preach, that's what I say. I don't mean any disrespect to people who feel like God's called them to preach, but that monkey, to get him to silence, to get him away from me, I did any and everything I could to ensure that I would have peace and quiet. So I went to seminary to become the best preacher that I possibly could be. And I didn't know it, but I discovered it awful quick, fast and in a hurry, that I was switching from a zoo of monkeys to a zoo of gorillas. Because gorillas are mean looking, they're intimidating, and they look like they can hurt you. And so I went from a harmless monkey slinging dung to becoming a gorilla who could pound somebody into submission with their big old fist. And so I became a gorilla, and my weapon of choice was the Bible. God said, I used the Bible to pound people into submission. For 3 years, I stood up behind a pulpit as a gorilla pounding people into the submission of paying tithes and to owing their lives to God, and that they had to serve him in some way by doing something for the church. This was insane for me. It was also inane. It was like a big joke. I was taking these Bible studies, they call them exegetical, which exegesis means to bring out of, and I was doing these studies of these books. One of them was Jeremiah, and it just so happens that in concluding of my undergraduate degree, to get my undergraduate degree, I had to take a class and exegete the book of Jeremiah, and they gave us as an assignment to exegete Jeremiah 31:31-34, and that's about the new covenant. And when I read about this new covenant and studied it, it didn't at all seem like I was living that new covenant. And that bothered me, that ate me up continuously. And I started to ask questions. And asking gorillas questions when they don't want to be questioned gets to be a pretty ruckus event, and gorillas can get mean and nasty with you if you test what they know as gorillas. And so I was asking them questions. I was asking them the wrong questions. And one old gorilla told me, he said, boy, you ask way too many questions. You're going to ruin your faith by asking so many questions. And that's about what I did. I ruined my faith, completely destroyed it. It was also during this time that I also had to take Bible history and also Christian history. And if you know anything about Western civilization history, then Christian history and Western civilization history are one and the same. You cannot separate them. It's impossible. And so I had to take six semesters, and I learned how all this mess, how the zoos got started, and why there was a zoo filled with nothing but gorillas. And so I came to the conclusion that Christianity, I call it monkeyanity, that's my personal nickname for it, is more of a cluster than it is anything else. And it's something that just could never answer my questions. It was one continuous circle. It was no end in sight. I couldn't get any answers. I couldn't get any peace. It was all one continuous running track, like running at a stadium in one of those circles where you always come back to the same conclusion. You never have anything different, and you know it's not right. You know there's something else, but there was no conclusion that I can come to. And then I began to see the reason why I had no conclusion is because the Bible had nothing to do with me. And I was trying to search and get all my answers from something that was never written to me to begin with. And then when I began to look at that and look at the cross and to see that Jesus died, was buried, and rose again, and that completed the scriptures, the Old Testament, and that the New Testament was in no way, shape, form, or fashion written to me. And I began to have some peace. And one day, my peace became complete.
Is that the day you met me?
Well, yeah, I guess the peace that I have now is because I met Bears Bartlett. I mean, he is the man who has shown me the way. Praise the Lord.
Can I get an amen? Yeah.
Yeah. But it took 40 minutes in MRI. I was getting an MRI to diagnose me with multiple sclerosis, and I was in there for 40 minutes. I'm terribly claustrophobic. It probably comes from my PTSD, and I had to take some drugs to calm me down when I was in there. But when I was in there, I remember me asking myself, if I'm a Christian, and I'm not supposed to have fear. Now, I know this is using it in the wrong context, but that was my thinking then. And that God did not give us a spirit of fear. And here I was afraid in this MRI. And then I began to think about homosexuals.
You're in a chamber with your head being x-rayed, and you think of homosexuals.
I was feeling claustrophobic. I was feeling afraid. The Bible said, don't be afraid. And yet here I was. And then it made me think of, and I don't know why, but I just did. It made me think of homosexuals and how many people, they try to not be homosexual. They can't explain why they have these feelings. They just cannot. And so I said, now, wait a minute. If I'm in here, and I'm having claustrophobia, and I'm afraid, and God forgives me because I confess my sins every time, and he forgives me, then, and of course, I had the wrong frame of mind, during that, Barris, of course. But if God can forgive me, and I'm just afraid of an MRI, then God can forgive homosexuals as well, just as easy.
Wow.
And that right there settled my mind, and I began to think and began to take notice that everything was completed. It wasn't even my sin Christ died for. He died to straighten out Adam's crap. And when he straightened out Adam's crap, he straightened out my crap, and there's no more sin. So it's impossible for people to sin. And people aren't built right. I'm not built right. I mean, my face isn't exactly even. You know, I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. I see a good-looking woman, ooh la la, sort of thing. So if I was being judged for sin, then I would be the worst sinner of all people because of how I think sometimes. So that brought me to the question that I had that brought me to what is the meaning of life? It brought it down to one question. Do I know who Jesus Christ is? And, buddy, I searched, you know, through church history, through Bible study, through exegetical classes. And one day I came down to the answer, yes, I know who he is. And, of course, I don't want to bore anybody. I know that you're a Greek scholar. But the one word that settled in my mind that all I need to know for any type of doctrine that anybody needs to know is that koine, a Greek word, ichthus, which is the acrostic that the early believers put out that spelled the first letter of these words, Jesus Christ, Son of God's Savior. Jesus Christ, Son of God, Savior. There is nothing more powerful than that. And it doesn't matter if somebody believes in him or not. It does not make ichthus any more or less real. Or that is my power to live. That's my power to know that I myself have the power of God within me. I really don't want to say, well, I am God, because people will say, well, you're really delusional here, you know, but I am, because I'm an independent moral agent and I can decide for myself, and there is no right or wrong. There's just me. And this is something that I want to share with all people. Now, Barris, all of this is all well said and done, and it may sound more dramatic than what it is. But the one thing that I've learned about my efforts in religion, in Christianity, is that I was acting like a monkey. And for me, religion is monkeyanity. And it doesn't offer me anything more than the opportunity to sling dung at people by trying to promote monkeyanity. And the study of monkeyanity, which is monkeyology. And so, therefore, the only thing that I can sling is loving kindness for all people, which is what that word agape, or in Latin caritas, which they mean is loving kindness, unconditional loving kindness for all humanity. That is the underlying definition of that word. So, just want to let you know that I love you. Barris, thank you, buddy, and Mike, for suffering me to do this interview. I've said a lot, and there's some here that probably may not agree with everything that I say and with my conclusions. And that's okay, because we're of the same family. We're humans. And because we're the same family, regardless of who you are, what you've done, what you believe, I can say with the Marine's heart, I love you. Hoorah! The Marine Corps motto is Semper Fidelis, and that's a Latin phrase which means always faithful. And I will always love you faithfully. And that's all I got, Barris.
Sean Smith, thank you. Thank you for being part of the Gospel Revolution.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being part of so many of the rest of us who have come to the same conclusion from different paths. Thank you.
Okay.
Gospel Revolution.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Remember, orthodoxy is oxymoronic. If orthodoxy was to be trusted in the least, then there would be only one version of it. What is more likely, in your opinion, that real orthodoxy might be found in one of the 40,000 splintered versions of orthodoxy? or in your own heart and mind, pre-planted there before you were born. Get your own copy of Mike's book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. In that, Mike lays out the gospel in simple, straightforward language and weaves it with stories from his personal experiences, which led him to the place of ultimate ease where he now lives. We've had some super reviews on this book on Amazon. Go to www.gospelrevolution.com and click the link halfway down the front page to order your own copy via Amazon. Hard copy, $27, paperback, $15.19, and Kindle edition, $3, and three whole extravagant, never to be repeated, cents.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, we're still getting reports back about people reading the book again. And even those who said they read it the first time and then they've read it again, they feel like they never read it before. So there is a lot to be gleaned. And we do appreciate everything that all of you intend and have done in this pledge drive. Let's make it a successful one together.
If you would like to partner with us, and not just in money, call our office on 561-557-1329 and speak to us about how you want to participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like yourself starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. So now it's good night for myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Eva, Alabama.
And it is good night from Michael Williams right here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, where fall has fell. It's only 85 today.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Better.
I am light. am divinity defined. I am the God on the inside. I am a star, a piece of it all. I am light.
Gospel Revolution.